right across through to the east coast from west coast below the desert. That was the Sudan. It's an area which people hadn't gone to from the Christian churches. They got to the coast, planted churches on the coast, but hadn't got to the interior. So Sudan Interior Mission started that way. Over the years, other missions merged with SIM. The work spread around the world. Andes Evangelical Mission, International Christian Fellowship in Pakistan and India. Other missions joined in. So the word Sudan wasn't appropriate. And so SIM is the official name with the tagline, Serving in Mission. About 1,000 missionaries active on the field right around the world. The work which Elaine and I have been involved in has been in West Africa, starting in Nigeria in 1979, moving to Niger, which is a French West Africa, French-speaking colony. We moved there in 1987. We stayed there for about 11 years. Then we came home so our children could do A-levels and some schooling, start their universities. And we went back to Niger again in 2006. The work which we've been doing in Niger right from the beginning has involved teaching people to read in the local language, which is one of the most important languages in the country, the Hausa language. Been teaching the men and women, boys and girls, how to read. Earlier on, there are many, many boys and girls. Because at the time when we first went to Niger, there weren't enough primary schools. Only 1 in 3 children went to primary school in the area we was working. Now, that's nationally. In the area we was working, it was less than 1 in 3. And so lots of children wanted to learn. Nowadays, there are more and more primary schools, so we see less children. We encourage them to go to school. But their parents missed out. It was when they were children, there was no schools. And so we're teaching far more adults these days. And particularly, we're teaching seniors and ladies. The men would like to learn to read as well, but so often the men have to leave the villages and go off and look for work to support their families because the farming is just not good enough to feed the family. Particularly 2011, last year, harvest was very bad. The rain stopped early, the crop didn't mature. Some of the places where we would want to teach, people aren't there. The men have gone. So we have been teaching the ladies especially. This is a work that begins in January each year, goes through to the end of April, sometimes in 8 or 9 villages, sometimes in 15 to 20 villages, depending on the demand and depending on the funding we have any particular time. We have a teacher who has had some basic Bible training, usually a discipleship course. Some have had more training, and they go and live for 4 months in a village where they're either just a very small handful of Christians, a very young church, or else a completely Muslim village to teach people how to read. In this particular series, this is a church that started about 4 or 5 years ago and has now grown, particularly amongst the older generation of people coming to the Lord, and 15 or 16 of them have been baptized, and they wanted to learn how to read because they never went to school. And once you're over 40-ish, it's quite hard to learn to read new things like that. So they've had to struggle, but they're keen, and they encourage each other and tease each other. And there's a really wonderful atmosphere. They're trying to get people motivated to learn to read. So we've seen churches being encouraged by reading classes. The reason we've focused on reading so often in our ministry has been that with many people, but especially people from Muslim backgrounds, they have to get to know you and trust you before they're willing to trust Jesus. Because we're Jesus' mouth, we're Jesus' voice, we're Jesus' hands, Jesus' feet. And if we're not nice people, then people are not going to believe that Jesus is a nice person. If we're not demonstrating kindness and love and truthfulness, then they're going to know that Jesus can't be trusted to be honest and truthful either. And it says people get to know us, that they start to ask really what's in their heart about Jesus and ask questions about, well, what do you Christians mean when you call him the Son of God? Because they've heard lots of stories, but they're not really the true stories. They want to hear what Christians really mean by some of these things which worry them. This particular village, no Christian ladies there at all, but quite a lot of the ladies have been coming to class. And that's the classroom they're meeting. I was talking to Naomi and Abby, yeah, about the school they go to. That's a secondary school. And that's, school meets fairly early in the morning. So they start 8 o'clock at the latest, and they stop around about 1 or 2 o'clock. And so in the afternoons, the school classrooms are free for us to use for literacy classes. And if you want a school in a village in Niger, you have to build it. That means mum and dad have got to get out there and put up a building. And then the government will try and supply a teacher or two to teach the children. And so the village has put up 4 of these classrooms. They have 400 students enrolled. This was 2011 when we went there, they told us this. They have 400 school students enrolled, and there were 3 teachers. And then one of them got a better job somewhere else, and so there's 2 teachers for 400 kids. And so education's still got a long way to go, but they're trying hard. They had 3 teachers this year, so it was a bit better. They had a few more staff. And we're fortunate. It meant we could use the classroom in the afternoons when the school was empty. And the ladies would come once they finished all their morning jobs and before they had to start their evening jobs. And so that's the time we teach ladies, is the middle of the day when it's nice and hot and no one wants to do anything much. But in the morning, they have to go to the well and pull water. And that village were having a lot of trouble with their well. They sometimes have to sit for an hour or two at the well for the water to seep in until they get another bucket full, and because the pump had broken down. The book we use, each story in the book has a Bible story. Each page has a Bible story on it. So as people learn new letters of the alphabet, learning to read, each time they're learning a new Bible story. And these are Muslim people. And it's through learning the stories of Jesus, they start to understand more and more who he is, what he did, and what they need to do to become his follower. One man actually has become a Christian. The men met at night in that village. Men don't meet with the ladies normally. The men were meeting at night, and one of the men became a believer, and one of the teenage boys also has become a believer. So in that village now there are 2 Christians. The problem we encountered there and in many other villages was that ladies got this idea they should be paid to learn to read. And this was because another organization started to give out sacks of wheat to the ladies who came to the class that they were teaching. Then everybody got the same idea. They said, we all need to be paid to learn to read. And this caused us a big problem because we didn't have the money or the resources. And even if we had, we would not have given out food as a reward for coming to class. It means people come to class for completely the wrong motives. In that village, I just showed you, one of the ladies came along and she was blind, but she wanted her name was there, so that when stuff got given out, some food got given away, she'd be on the, even though she was a blind lady, and no chance she could learn to read. And so people weren't coming for the right reason. We want to show people that we do love them, and like I said earlier, 2011 was a bad year. People didn't have enough food to eat. Instead of eating 3 meals a day, many were going down to 2 meals a day and not eating enough food. And so one of the things we were able to do in that village and in a couple of others was to put in a little warehouse with sacks of grain in it to provide a food that could be affordable, sold at a subsidized rate. So that food would all have been distributed earlier in the summer. So I said the men go off to look for work. When they come home to do the farming, come July, they bring what money they've got home. They don't have to buy food at the market where it's extremely expensive this year, but they were able to buy food from these little warehouses at a reasonable price. And now, that money that they gathered at the warehouse, they'd be next month going out to buy new sacks of grain to refill the warehouse back up. And so each village is responsible for its own little warehouse, its cereal bank. Oh, I hit the wrong button, sorry. Try that one. There you go. Yeah, we can show Christian love, but at the same time we have to show the gospel, and we don't want to make one thing conditional on another. So the cereal banks, they belong to the village. They don't belong to the church, they belong to the village. And so it's not you have to become a member of the church to get some food. No, we help everybody. Because it's a Muslim country, there are always people who are not happy to see Christians working in the villages. And we always run into opposition of different sorts. That's normal. We expect it. And we just keep persevering. I'm using the wrong button, I'm sorry. Thank you. Another village, which was on the main road, they asked us in 2011, please come and teach us and our people, a Muslim village. We went there, we met with the head man of the village and all the people, and over 50 adults signed up to learn how to read. And we even took a teacher there. When we took a teacher, the head man couldn't find anywhere for him to live, which had been the condition. We don't ask the village to pay anything for literacy work, but we do ask them to provide a house for the man to live in, who's the teacher. And suddenly said, oh, we can't find a house for him. And the people who lived there, they knew that there was two guest houses belonging to that head man, but he refused to allow the teacher to live. So they knew he was opposed. Couldn't take the classes there in 2011. Come 2012, we went back to the same place, and because a few of the older men insisted, they said, no, we must come back, even if the head man is not 100% in favor, still come back to us. So we went back there again. Over 80 ladies started to learn to read, and opposition meant that suddenly they all stopped coming. What had happened was a Muslim priest from that village who worked in a neighboring city, he came home for the weekend, he saw the Christians had started a reading class in his village, and he didn't like that. And so he went door to door and said, hey, you have anything to do with those Christians, you're going to hell. Then he went to the well and he sat down by the well. All the women who came to draw water, he said, you know, if you go into that reading class, you're in big trouble. You know, if you die, we're not going to bury you. And he scared the ladies away. And so it took 2 or 3 weeks before a few of them came back and kept up with the classes. But little by little, it will continue. There's a evangelist who lives about 7 miles away, and he knows those people. Even though the class has stopped at the end of April, he'll keep going back, and he keeps in contact with them. When we go back next month, or the end of November, we hopefully might even be able to reset up the class again for 2013 in that village. And it's by long-term perseverance that can get breakthroughs into new communities. The lady there in the blue and white stripes is the wife of the man who was doing the teaching, and she was helping her husband teaching some of these ladies how to read, teaching them the Bible stories. Elaine actually wrote the book there they're using there for their classes. But apart from that ministry, which has been a long-term ministry, which we've used in Niger since the late 80s, we've also been involved in other general mission work in Niger, and that's been a joy too. We lived in a town for 6 years, from 2006 until this furlough, called Dogondouchi. And Dogondouchi is a town of about 30,000 people on the main east-west road. It has maybe 200 plus people in the churches on a Sunday morning. So percentage-wise, very small, but enough people to be a viable Christian body, which has got 4 or 5 little congregations. The one we were in had grown from about 15 to 50 in the time we were there, and that new building made a big difference when that was dedicated last year. Dogondouchi, incidentally, means tall rock, and that's the rock there with the town in the valley below it, which gives the town its name. When I said a sack of grain, if you go to Tesco's and buy a sack of grain, that's what you have to, it's that sort of size. It's, you know, 90 kilos, 100 kilos worth of grain. And somebody coming home from the store. Church was a mixture of people from different backgrounds, mainly Hausa people, but also people from the Fulani. And this guy was actually the first Tuareg or Tamajek person in Dogondouchi to become a Christian. Maybe if you've heard about the desert and the blue men who put these big turbans on up in the desert, the Tuareg. Well, they also live in all the cities of Niger. And this guy and his family were camel farmers, and they, when the rains come, they would go back into the upland areas and out of the way of the farmers and look after their camels there. And when the rains were finished, they'd come back down into the farmlands and eat the stubble and the hay and the straw that's left over. And he got to know one of the evangelist's families where he was always grazing his camels, and he became a Christian. Later on, his wife also became a Christian. How many children has he got? Yeah, three lads on the bike with him. And that bike is what he makes his money with. That's his taxi. Because in Dolgan Duchy, we don't have four-wheel taxis, but we have loads and loads of motorbike taxis. And they just have to pay a little bit of money each week to the county council, or town council rather, and they operate their bikes as taxis. And that's how they make his living. But he was also teaching a ladies' class at midday in one of the neighbouring villages. So he'd work in his taxi in the morning, then he'd go off and teach the ladies for about 2 or 3 hours, then he'd come back and then start working his motorbike taxi again in the afternoons. It's hard to make a living, isn't it? Even in this country, it's hard to make a living. It's harder still in Africa, because there's no social security or things like that. So if you're out of a job, you're out of a job, and there's no safety net. So everyone has to try and find 2 or 3 different ways of making a living. Got some people here. How would you like to stand up every Sunday morning and do a song for the whole church? Wouldn't that be good? Yeah? Be wonderful, wouldn't it? Who would like them to do a song every Sunday morning? Well, this is what these lads are doing. They're probably about your age when they started doing this. They're just finishing primary, just starting secondary school. And every Sunday morning they said, we're going to have a special group. What's their name? Delkaka Allah. We give God the glory is the name of their group. And they said, let's have a solos every Sunday morning. And now they've got actually about 3 girls who join in with them as well. But it's not just this particular group. We also have the Sunday school. They come in on a Sunday morning. And before they go off to their Sunday school class, they also usually sing a song or two, a chorus or two. And sometimes they've got some memory verses they've learned, and they'll recite their memory verses. So we really enjoyed this church. And then the youth had a choir, the older secondary school students. And then the ladies had a choir. And we usually have at least an hour of singing before we moved on with any other parts of the worship in the Sunday mornings. It's good to see people being baptized, following Jesus. Many of the youth who came up through the church have been baptized recently, but also people from outside the church who've become into the church, become Christians recently. The lady there in the lower of those 2 pictures came from a situation that was a little bit difficult. She'd been divorced. Then she'd become a Christian. And that day she was going to be baptized. And she nearly ran away. She felt so embarrassed to be baptized. Because we've been baptized outdoors in that basin that's been baptized. It's next to the well. And they pour water out the well and fill the basin. And that's what the market gardeners, vegetable gardeners, go and dip their watering cans in and water all the gardens around and about. The trouble was, her ex worked in the next garden. And she was convinced her ex was going to come and laugh at her. And that's the devil just trying to separate her from obedience to Jesus. Jesus said, be baptized. But she was obedient, and she's following Jesus now. You can see the people growing in Jesus. We have every opportunity to share the gospel. Niger is a Muslim country, but it's what they call a secular constitution. It means it's just an ordinary civil law. There's no religious law in the country. It's a secular constitution. That means we can have every opportunity as Christians to tell Muslim friends and neighbors about Jesus. You got many Muslims in the community here? No? You see them doing their prayers sometimes? When they do their prayers 5 times a day? And they wash their faces, their ears, their eyes, their hair, their hands, their feet before they do their prayers, so that they be ceremonially pure before they do their prayers. And that's what this lady in the red and stripes, like, she's a pastor's wife, and she's saying to the Muslim lady with the habib, she's saying, you know, you Muslims, you're washing your face, you're washing your hands, you're washing your feet before you pray each day, but how do you wash your hearts? How do you make your heart clean? She's making you think. And then they went on to There was the pastor was outside the gate, the men were meeting outside, the ladies inside, because it was a special occasion for a baby that had been born in the Christian community, and then the baby was been giving its officially giving its name at the eighth day, which is the custom for all babies, whether they're Muslim or Christian or whatever. And the ladies, all the neighbors, Muslim and Christian alike, had gathered to make the food for the party, for the dedication. And so they said, ladies, come and sit down behind the gate. We'll listen to what the pastor's got to say. And so the men were meeting outside, the ladies inside. Openness to preach the gospel. And that's what happens in the towns like Dogondoochee. Meet friends. Talk to them about Jesus. Elaine with one of her friends, a Muslim lady who came from another tribe, but she wanted to learn to read in Hausa. So Elaine taught her to read. We pray that Fatima one day will trust in Jesus, because she does know the gospel very clearly now. But she's still Muslim. Her husband's got a fairly good job, and she's got three nice kids. I think she's a bit afraid of making a change. It could be too dangerous. She might lose too much. It's a cost sometimes. Because if the husband does drive his wife away, if he becomes a Christian, then she loses the children. Children always belong to the husband. The other main job that we have there, job I enjoy very much, and that's teaching the Bible. Teach the Bible in both the Bible schools and in the churches, and on the radio as well, have a chance to preach. And we want to train other people. Because I said there's a good enough Christian community there, in the whole area, maybe up to 3,000 Christians. People who are capable and willing and eager to take the church forward and to expand it. But they need to be trained, need to know how to use the Bible. And we praise God the Bible exists, has been translated in the Hausa language, and we've got resources, and so we teach people to use them. In the Bible school at Geshemi earlier this year, I was teaching the book of Revelation and teaching Bible lands. Had the computer there to help show people what Israel looks like. And that's a four-year course those students are on. And some of those become literacy. Some of them actually were literacy teachers before being called into the pastorate. We've had a dozen people now either have gone through or are in training who started as literacy teachers and now going on to be full-time workers in the area. We also teach in the churches, village and town. People choose a book to study in the Hausa language, sometimes in French. And it's a 10-week course. And we take that 10-week course and people work on it in their homes during the week for 5 days. Then on the sixth day, we get together and discuss what's been learned. Courses include on prayer, on introducing the Bible, on the book of Mark, on Corinthians, all different subjects. The most popular by far is the Christian family. People everywhere want to do the course on the Christian family. So it's inside a typical house made of sun-dried mud brick with mud plaster, a couple of nice chairs, and a mat on the floor, and a few sacks of grain stored up one end. Oh, and the little girl there, his daughter, her name's Hallelujah. It's a good name, isn't it? So next time you have a baby, any volunteers, you can call her Hallelujah. By the way, we had a friend who said, we Westerners are terrible for the church. We just don't have enough babies. You've got to have lots of babies so the church will grow. We got told off. So when we meet, get together and we discuss what the Bible has to say and what we've learned that week. It's a lovely way of getting people growing in Jesus, discussing what they've learned from their study. We've seen little churches grow and become bigger churches. So new churches started. That was once upon a time a literacy class. It became a little tiny church. Got a new roof on it just before we left in May this year. That was also a church that started the same size as the previous picture. They grew too big. They had to build a new church. And when that church started to get damaged this year, well, in 2011, they built a cement church. And that's a village. It's not a big city. That's just a village where most of the people have become Christians. They'll have usually between 150 to 200 on a Sunday morning. When all the men come home from their travels and it's a big do like Christmas, they'll have up to 400 in church. There's a couple of churches like that in our area where the village has become a majority Christian village. Not common, but it does happen. That one also started as a reading class. I used to stop there when I was traveling around and teach a few lads to read, and a few became Christians. And then we appointed a teacher for them. And that guy went off to Bible school, and when he came back after 4 years Bible school, he became their pastor, and he lives there. They also built a pastor's house, and that's where that has now become an established church. Again, this one also. Church that started as a reading class many years ago. Guy worked there for about 10 years. Little by little, it became a church. Things normally don't happen overnight in a Muslim society, but little by little, Christians can have an impact on locations, and people come to the Lord. And that was a church, we just got the roof on it in 2011. Elaine and I are moving house. We've left Dogondoochee, moving to a place called Jinju. And at Jinju, we want to start a new work there, as the Lord leads. It's a new center that's just been made last October. It's only 35 miles from that Bible school at Geshemi, but there's no church there at all. We're going to have to find a place to live when we go back there. We'll be moving there hopefully in December. We need to rent a house. There's not many houses there to rent, but we hope we can find one. Praying the Lord will provide us a house to live in so we don't sleep outside, which we do in the hot season. And we want to take the gospel into that area.